And we're back on Downtown on a Tuesday afternoon. Time to check in with our favorite Jersey boy, Eric Meehan of Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, for this week's edition of Message in the Bottle. Hello and Happy New Year, sir.
Happy New Year to everyone out there in Radioland. I am so sorry, both to you and to anyone who is hoping for more modern updates from me over the past couple weeks. Obviously, Rich had to run some old clips, which I'm sure were probably more cogent than anything I could have offered during those couple of weeks. But busy at the store and appreciative that you guys could tread water, as it were. But we're back. We're back for another glorious year. And figured today we could talk about a little bit about what happened in 23 and what's coming up in 24 in the world of wine. Lots of stuff, really. So, Rich, you happened to mention that, you know, as you were bringing me in, that you had a lot of food, a lot of joyful inebriation, and that's a wonderful thing. I hope everybody had just wonderful gatherings with everybody during the past couple of weeks, whether it was Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa, just hanging out with people, and then, of course, celebrating the passage of the new year. 23 was hard. This just in. And I don't think 24 is going to be much better. But we're going to let's just touch on stuff that happened in 23, because this is really important, because it factors into what we're going into. 23, obviously, we had inflation, and that's not just in the wine industry or the specialty goods industry, but it really it caused, you know, people to look in their wallets and say, maybe not today, not just for specialty products like I sell, but for a lot of things, including in our industry and a lot of other industries, the fact that people starting businesses may have withheld that idea until rates fall, things like that. So inflation obviously played a major, major role. COVID lingers. Not only is it, you know, kind of coming back, and I read today that only 19% of adults have gotten the booster. Shame on you folks. Yeesh. Go out and do it. I have, not to humble brag, but go do it. But it's continuing things from the pandemic. Champagne shortages, houses not having filled their yearly allotments. So things like Moët Chandon, like, couldn't get it, you know, barely. I got 4 bottles this year. And then continued shipping hills, you know, things are still recuperating from that. The climate, I mean, drought, flood, fires, hail, name it. It was unbelievable for everyone. And I can't, we'll talk about that and what's coming for 24, but I mean, that was obviously a serious issue. The other thing that I'll just kind of bring up, this is my get off my lawn thing, is the natural wine getting too natural. And I think this is actually a direct result of what I mentioned before, which is the costs of getting into business. There's a lot of young winemakers who really want to get into it, and there's certain ideals, but the cost of getting into the wine business at a serious level and keeping it clean, keeping it, you know, in the ways that will really help people get into wine, it's getting prohibitive. And some people are circumventing that by making, you know, kind of dirty wines. And I don't think that's a good path. Again, this is my get off my lawn segment, but it's kind of true. But that's okay. What are we looking at 24? Well, let's hit the climate first, because I mean, we're sitting here. Yeah, there's a little white on the ground, but let's be honest. I mean, we're sitting here in Maine in January, and we haven't hit the January thaw yet. But what does this mean for wines? And I've been thinking about this for years, but I'm really thinking about it now. First, do we recognize new regions? I mean, there are places. I mean, obviously, the obvious one to bring up is the southern part of England, right? Kent and those places where a lot of champagne houses are throwing some money because of their ability now to grow Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier, Chardonnay in really quality ways. But also farther north, I mean, including maybe us. So it's, and what does that mean for the old, you know, blue blood? Do we decertify them? I mean, let's be honest. The things that made these places famous were a certain level of acidity, a certain level of ripeness, a certain je ne sais quoi. That's no longer the case. Burgundy is now turning out overripe wines at a rate where they're having to decertify wines because they're just, there's too much. We talked about Brix, right, which is the ratio essentially of sugar and other solids to the water in a grape. It's off the charts. So, and the darker side of this is, will some regions just simply cease to exist? Which is entirely legitimate. By the way, Rich, I don't have a watch or a clock or anything, so do let me know when I'm coming up on time.
I will indeed have plenty of time.
Because I have far too much to rail on, so we'll, you know, I wouldn't want to keep going. But yeah, no, I mean, legit. I mean, when I was in France, it was going on about 2 years ago now, the Rhone is hurting. The Languedoc, I mean, there's just drought. There's dry riverbeds everywhere, and that's not just in southern France. So will some wine regions simply cease to exist, or will they need, you know, a new form of dry farming and things like that? It's undeniable. I mean, you know, so anyway. This one I read, and I was amused by this, this thing of regenerative agriculture. Regenerative agriculture is essentially what I've been talking to you folks for years about, which is biodynamic agriculture, which is treating your lands holistically, planting things, being, you know, near things that regenerate the soils, that are in harmony with nature, as opposed to simply leaching out stuff and then moving on. But anyway, now it's apparently called regenerative agriculture. So look for that in 24. This is something very serious, very legit. Labor costs. Minimum wage just went up again. I'm aware of this as a small retailer. I'm fine with it. I'm not against it. But just be aware that in the U.S. and elsewhere where these are things, it's getting harder and harder, not only because of paying people, but because of the final recognition that the U.S., but also plenty of places in Europe have been bringing in cheap outside labor for years and years and years and years. And finally, governments are cracking down on that. Some in ways that are a little sort of hostile. Hello, southern border of the U.S. But also other ways that are a little bit more, you know, legit, which is saying you're bringing in people who are poor and making them work for, you know, wages that our people would never be legally allowed to work for. That's happening everywhere. So do be aware that that's either going to cause problems or just increases in price. Consolidation. Consolidation. Big, 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 big corporations buying things that you've heard of, like Sonoma-Cutrer, Rombauer, places like that. But also on a smaller scale, little vineyards, and not just vineyards, but the alcohol concerns, specifically one that I was reading about that I loved in Vermont, which one of the products I carry, Eden Cider, it's a bunch of little, you know, it's a cooperative thing to increase, you know, they buy bottles in bulk, they do this in bulk, they ship in bulk together, bundling together because costs are rising. How am I doing on time?
You've got about 3 minutes left.
Okay, good. The rise of the East Coast, the rise of the East Coast of the U.S., for all the places where the climate is devastating and horrible, and I'm not suggesting that it hasn't been hard on the East Coast, but the wine regions from essentially Virginia North are only benefiting, and benefiting in big ways, not only because of the quality of fruit that is being grown, but also agritourism is filling their coffers in ways that they can afford to compete with a lot of these folks on the West Coast, etc. So be on the alert for that, which is great for us because we can go, you know, drive up and down, or hopefully, if Senator Baldacci is successful, train up and down the East Coast and visit these places. Diversity, huge thing. Only 1% of the U.S. wineries are black-owned. Huge efforts on the part of minorities to not only own but also work in the industry, and that is being encouraged to the point where customers are calling me. I would like to buy, minority-owned wines, etc. So that's great. The last thing I want to talk about before I am out is non-alcoholic wine. Speaking of overindulgence, etc., dry Januaries, etc., it is a thing. It is real. People are putting money into it, which is great because it is nice to be able to offer non-alcoholic wine. It is even nicer to be able to offer something good. And you are finally starting to see that. So if you are, or your family member, friends, or whatever, are trying to cut out some alcohol for either the month of January or for an indeterminate future, don't be afraid to ask. Ask, and you will probably be delightfully surprised. It's absolutely a thing. So let's go for it. If that's your drive in the new year, go for it. And with that, I'm happy to join you all again in 24, and we'll go forward from here.
What's the wine of the week? We've got about a minute left.
My gosh, I don't know that I have a wine of the week. We're only opening on Friday, but you know what? As long as we're at it, why don't I bring up the Navarro Vineyards non-alcoholic? It's Gewürztraminer juice. So it is non-fermented Gewürztraminer juice. It's the first part of their harvest. They do it. They make popsicles for their grandkids, etc. And it's a wonderful way to launch into that if that's what you're into.
Good stuff right there, as always. Thank you, Eric. A happy New Year. Good to talk with you again. We'll visit again next Tuesday.
Happy New Year to all of you. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much, Eric. Eric Mahan, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. Message in the bottle every Tuesday afternoon here on Downtown. Again, they're taking a little break. Back open on Friday. Visit them. 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor.